Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. And sell more with less effort thanks to the Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/redcircle, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/redcircle now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/redcircle.
At Kroger Pharmacy, care is making it easy to get vaccinated. Care is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. Care is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care is in store. Visit kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.
Right. Double G Show here with Paul Fontaine. This is our second simulcast to the BSPN channel as well. So our sister channel, BSPN Media, Fight Game Media, welcome everybody. We're going to preview UFC 308 with Paul. Paul has been doing a lot of post-fight coverage on Wrestling Observer Radio, and he's covered UFC, MMA historically as well. And he also has a little betting sort of strategy called ROI that we'll tap into here a little bit. We've talked about this before on preview stuff, but this is our foray into getting back into MMA when it comes to our audio shows. You and Ryan Frederick used to have In the Clinch, which is on hiatus, possibly permanently. We'll see. We'll see what happens there. And then we just did a boxing show with Carlos Toro last weekend as well. So we're trying to dabble back into boxing and MMA on the Fight Game Media side, but also add it to BSPN Media. So Paul, after that long intro, how are you this afternoon?
Good. I'm good. Yeah. Getting all set for a big weekend, UFC 308 in Saudi Saturday afternoon. There's a couple of wrestling shows this weekend as well. So yeah, I busy, and then life, you know, getting ready for Halloween and yes, swimming lessons and all that good stuff. So yeah, weekends are nuts for me right now, but I love it.
And you're gonna help me out next week the Fight Game podcast, and we're gonna live stream that on the F4W online YouTube channel. So yeah, we're gonna be doing some stuff over these next couple of weeks, but first, let's talk about UFC 308. Now, you mentioned that it is an earlier show, which I appreciate very much, because I'm going to be able to watch the show, and then wife and I think are going to go to the movies. I think we're going to see the new Saturday Night Live movie.
Oh, yeah.
And then probably go out to dinner. And then I'm guessing, I haven't heard back from Big Dave yet, but I'm guessing we're all going to get back together on Wrestling Observer Radio. I think that's the plan, but I'm not 100% sure Saturday evening, but we'll discuss that. I'll talk to him tomorrow. But this is like a delight for me because, you know, it is kind of fun to watch these shows in prime time and a little bit later for you. But I like, we've seen this with WWE of late, these afternoon wrestling shows. The All-In show from Wembley is really early, and then you kind of get the wrestling out of the way, and then you have the rest of your day. So I'm very much looking forward to this early start time.
Yeah, I mean, and you know, I watch the whole show, so really, like, it's getting started at 9 a.m. my time, 7 a.m. your time. I think the main card is 10 your time, probably.
11, maybe, actually. Maybe. 11.
11? Okay, yeah. So 3 hour pre-show. Yeah, that's about right. So noon my time, and then, you know, I mentioned I got swimming lessons, so I gotta, like, normally I'll be tweeting live, and my tweets are on ESPN and stuff, and that'll be going on for a while, but then at some point they'll disappear. And, you know, because life gets in the way. But, you know, I'll get back and watch the show when I finish up. But, yeah, I mean, it's always nice to have the show over before dinner, you know, and then you got your whole evening free, which is nice.
One of the things about these UFC shows, and you and I have talked about this in person, but what I find very interesting is, as it's going to relate to their upcoming television deal, which is, these ESPN shows are sort of a tried and true formula What do you think their base number of fans who kind of, you know, here just, you know, more or less subscribe to pay for every pay-per-view? Because like I watch some of them and I go, oh, this is an interesting fight. And then I watch some and I go, okay, this is for the hardcores. And then I watch some and I go, okay, this is for everybody. But they still do incredible business on these shows.
I think, I mean, if you look at the numbers, the baseline is probably around, I don't know, 500,000 that are going to watch no matter what it is on ESPN, prelims, main card, whatever time it's on. You know, obviously if it's earlier, it's going to be a little bit less, but they still do really strong numbers for these. Like, you know, this one that's starting, you know, it'll be on ESPN Plus at 10 a.m. going up against college football. But they'll be, you know, like we don't get those ESPN Plus numbers, but I've always kind of assumed that it's like something like 250,000 probably that are watching on ESPN Plus. And then when they're simulcast, a lot of times you just stay on ESPN Plus because you don't have to switch formats, and you know, everything is broadcast on ESPN Plus. You can jump around, you know, maybe the prelims are on ESPN News and then the main card's back on Plus and, you know, like all that. And here in Canada, that's kind of what we have to do.
Right.
Like the early prelims are on Fight Pass. Then we go to TSN or I guess it's Sportsnet now for the prelims. Then we might have to go to pay-per-view for the main card. So literally three different formats that I'm watching these shows on. But for you guys in the US, it's all on ESPN Plus. And yeah, like you did see a bit of a drop when they moved to ESPN Plus, but the pay-per-view numbers went up.
Yeah.
So I assume that means that there's more people watching on ESPN Plus. We'll never know, but ESPN seems really happy with what, you know, with the business they're doing. So I assume, you know, that's a, you know, it's not a ton, but it's a nice number to count on. And for the big shows, they always get an uptick. So you get like a million for a Conor fight.
And that is the ESPN strategy of them carrying you. They're also going to cover you. And that's still the biggest name in town when it comes to sports coverage. And so the other thing about this is there was an NFL Monday night game. They had two Monday night games. One of them was exclusively on ESPN Plus. And I saw a number that was really small as far as how many people were watching. Yeah, it was that. Now, you know, the way that the I'm trying to maybe it was The Athletic or something, how they
let me guess, because I haven't heard this. I'm gonna guess 6 million.
It was way less.
Okay
it was like a million and something.
Wow.
And and I think the reason was that I think it went, I don't know if it went directly head to head, but there was some crossover.
Yeah.
There was the free game. I'm not sure if it was on ESPN or ABC. And then there was the ESPN Plus game. Okay. So, you know, that was a little bit of a weird strategy to put
them
like
that. And it
wasn't
a big game either, right?
It was a San Diego, or not San Diego, LA Chargers and the Arizona Cardinals, I believe.
Yeah.
So,
I mean,
but, you know, this universe of ESPN Plus subscribers, I think we're still only at like 25 million subscribers of ESPN Plus. So UFC's next television deal, we assume, I mean, I think it'd be in their best interest to still work with ESPN, at least for the pay-per-views. And then there's this idea of having a B package that goes somewhere else and maybe even adds more weeks to the cards. More weeks to the
live events at least. They may, you know, you may have some where you have two on the same weekend.
Yeah, Saturday and a Sunday or something like that.
Yeah, if you do an international show, they sometimes remember that the days back, there were times when you'd have two shows on the same day and occasionally even head to head.
Ryan Frederick mentioned, he's like, F my life. Like, if this happens.
Well, the rumor is that they currently have 42 events between pay per view and TV. Increasing that to 52 and putting the extra 10 on Netflix. That's kind of the goal.
That was, I read that from John O'Ran's newsletter. Yeah. And that was like an executive kind of in the business, like making an educated guess. I mean, they're already working with WWE when it comes to TKO and Raw. So it looks like they have a built in relationship there already.
And they're currently getting, I believe it works out to about 13 million a show on ESPN Plus. So, you know, you do that math, give them a slight increase. That could be as much as $200 million a year for that extra thing. And, you know, fighters are going to get, well, at least 5% of that. So, we'll talk about that in a bit.
Yeah.
But I mean, for fans that want to keep up with everything, at some point you just okay, enough's enough.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Like, and for me, like, technically I'm not really paid to cover, you know, I mean, there's auxiliary ways that I get paid, but, you know, I don't really have to watch all the shows. At this point I'm doing it more for the exposure, you know, and also I make money on the gambling. So,
yeah. Yeah. Which is,
yeah,
another reason why ESPN wants them is because lots of people like you, and they have
a good portion. Setting. Yeah. When you talk about that hardcore base, they're watching the prelims because they got money on those fights.
Yeah.
It's big. It's big.
All right. Let's talk about 308, and we'll go through the main card, and then you can tell me what else is worth watching. So,
sure.
Main event is Ilia Topuria against Max Holloway. Topuria's I don't know how recent these odds are. -265 and Holloway's a +205 underdog. Topuria 5-0. He's undefeated in his last five, including winning the featherweight title at UFC 298. Holloway is 4-1 in his last five, and that includes beating Justin Gaethje for the BMF at UFC 300 and literally beat him, knocked him out with 1 second left on the clock. I was, you know, I like watching the UFC countdown because it kind of tells the stories, and sometimes, you know, I remember these fights, but, you know, they may have been 6 months ago, and so it's nice to be refreshed. And the thing that I remember about the Topuria fight is just how impressive he was. But then you rewatch the Max thing and you're like, oh my gosh, this is the craziest thing in the world that, you know, he's telling Gaethje, he's got the fight in the bag, and he's telling Gaethje, you know, bite down on your mouthpiece. Let's go at it at the end. And so I think Max is an easy person to root for. He's always been one of my favorite fighters. He's an easy Hall of Famer. But like my head says, you know, this is probably Topuria's fight to lose. Where do you sit with this?
Well, full disclosure, I mean, Max Holloway has long been my favorite fighter. You know, going back, the first UFC show I ever covered, he headlined, and that was in Saskatoon in, you know, first live show I ever covered, like as a credentialed reporter. And, you know, he was super nice to me there and just, you know, just an engaging personality and has great fights. But yeah, I mean, you mentioned that, you know, Topuria is 5-0 in his last five. I mean, he's undefeated in his career.
Yeah.
15-0. He's, 6-0 in UFC, I think, or maybe 7-0 in UFC with six finishes. So he's a machine, and he just beat Alexander Volkanovski, who Max Holloway's lost three times to. So if you're using MMA math, you know, you're going with Topuria. And, you know, and Holloway is young. You know, he's younger than you think, even though he's been around forever. I think he's only 31, but Topuria's only 27. You know, so he's not even his prime yet. And I guess Holloway's 32 now. But yeah, so I as much as I hate to say it, I lean towards Topuria. And you said -265.
Yeah, the number that I saw.
Yeah, and I'm looking at 255. So I mean,
okay, so it's coming down about a little bit.
Yeah, well, or I'm, you know, different sites, but that seems about right. So I wouldn't necessarily say there's value on either side there. You know, unless, you know, you just want to, you know, you want to put money on Max Holloway and root for him because you want, you know, like you're getting 2-1. So you bet $50, you're getting back 150 if he wins. So, that's nice to be able to root for him. And if you bet on Topuria, you know, that $50 bet's only bringing you back like 70. So, you know, I wouldn't put money on Topuria, even if you think he's going to win. It's not really worth your value, I don't think. So, but the fight's going to be great. You know, like you said, that Max Holloway, I mean, that was the fight of the year, maybe the fight of the decade. You know, some will call it the best fight of all time, like just the best finish you're ever going to see, and literally last second knockout. But then you got Topuria, who is a killing machine.
Yeah.
And it's kind of home base for him. Like, he's from Spain, but, you know, he's going to have a lot of fans there in Saudi Arabia. And, yeah, and Holloway's coming in from, you know, Hawaii. So I mean, it's a big, big fight. I'm really looking forward to it. The last featherweight besides Alexander Volkanovski that Holloway has lost to was Conor McGregor in 2013. So, you know, keep that in mind. I mean, it's a long time, and this guy's been around for a long time. So I'm super pumped for this fight. And I always bet on every fight, and I just don't even know if I want to bet on this one because I feel like Topuria is going to win, but I don't want to root for him.
Now this basically tells the people watching and listening how poor my world geography is, but this show is happening in Abu Dhabi, which is in the UAE.
Yeah.
That is also Saudi Arabia, or I'm not exactly Saudi Arabia.
You know, I'm like, I'm wrong. It's Abu Dhabi. I'm like, who is that guy that got knocked out? And then they asked him where he was, and he said Saudi Arabia, and they said he couldn't continue because he didn't know where he was. Meanwhile, it's like half the people watching probably thought it was Saudi Arabia. But yeah, it's, you're right. It's Abu Dhabi. Saudi Arabia is another deal that they have. Yeah, Abu Dhabi. I apologize if I said Saudi Arabia. Yeah, it's definitely Abu Dhabi.
So, and this is maybe some education for everybody, because I didn't know where they were in location, like in okay. proximity. But this says Abu Dhabi is the capital of the United Arab Emirates, the largest of seven emirates. The Emirate of Abu Dhabi shares its border with the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia.
So they're close.
They're close. They're close. And so the reason why I brought that up is because the reason why this show could be on could be early in the afternoon is because they pay the UFC essentially a little bit more so that they can show it in their prime time, and so UFC gets a little bit bigger piece up front, and they don't worry as much about the pay-per-view business for ESPN, or I guess maybe ESPN gets more upfront. I'm not exactly sure how that works, but essentially that's why the show is on early for us in the US.
Yeah, they give them, I think the number I heard was 30 million. Don't quote me on that, but it's a lot. It's not quite WrestleMania money, but it's a lot more than they're getting for most of these shows. But they are getting like pretty much every pay-per-view they do now, they're getting a site fee. And it usually starts at 5 million, you know, and even a lot of the fight nights are getting 2-3 million. So they're just, they're printing money, these guys. But they get to choose who they want, and they want Topuria. I believe he's Muslim, and I could be wrong in that, but he's also, you know, it's a 6-7 hour flight from Spain. So you'll have a lot of people from Spain going, you know, as opposed to if he was fighting in North America, I'm sure. And then the card is loaded up with Muslim fighters on the undercard. So, they're as they always are on these shows. So,
and by the way, we have a special segment after we talk about the main card with Paul's best bets. I've queued up like sound effect and everything for it.
Oh boy.
we'll go your three favorite bets. Yeah. We'll do that after this. Okay. So second fight, the semi-main is Khamzat Chimaev against Robert Whittaker. Chimaev is a minus 265 as far as what I have. Whittaker plus 210. This is a number one contender middleweights fight. Chimaev obviously undefeated. Last one at UFC 294 over Kamaru Usman, which kind of tells you how long it's been since he's actually been in a UFC cage. And Whitaker's 3-2 in his last five, losing to Adesanya and Duplessis, but last beating Ikram Alisgarov in June, which was the original date for the Chimaev fight. Before, what did Dana say? He was like deathly ill, or he was like he had a phrase for Chimaev, his illness. Like he got sick, and Chimaev explained that even in training, like he just couldn't go. And the doctors told him he needs to stop training altogether. But I forget how Dana explained it, but it was like deathly ill or something like that. And
yeah.
About if he's ever going to fight again. And so that was only a few months ago. So it sounds like he's okay. We have yet to get to the weigh-ins. So we'll see. A lot of people had already expected this fight to just be postponed because of Chimaev's history. But right now, as of Thursday afternoon, the fight is still on, and Chimaev is the favorite. And I guess if you are talking yourself into Whittaker, the way you do it is to say, A, maybe Shemaev's not 100% healthy. B, Robert Whittaker puts a lot of pressure on guys and is tough as all hell. And that might be it, right? Just the the toughness factor from Whitaker and his ability to push through and persevere and just out tough people. And then you're betting on the striking just being on. But again, this is like one of those heart over, like Whitaker as well, one of my favorite fighters. But this is one of those, like, you know, mind over heart kind of picks where Chimaev seems like the smarter pick, but I'm going to root for hell like Whitaker.
Yeah. And the thing with Chimaev is he hasn't like fought, obviously, the quality of competition that Whitaker has fought. But when he has fought big names, he's won. He's undefeated. Last three fights were, you know, against decent sized names, Gilbert Burns, Kevin Holland, and Kamaru Usman. Usman was moving up on short notice, and a lot of people feel that Usman won that fight. So, you know, you can look at that. And to me, that's the best case for thinking, you know, for betting for Whitaker, rooting for Whitaker, thinking he's going to win, because, you know, he's bigger than Usman. He's, you know, obviously natural middleweight, and he's got way more power than Whitaker. And Usman's more about the wrestling, and Chimaev also, you know, is wrestling, so he's going to have his takedown defense. Chimaev, when he first came into UFC, he was mauling through people, but obviously, you know, that was on the undercard, and he struggled a little bit, you know, as he's moved up in competition. You know, he had that fight with Usman, majority decision. He had struggled with Burns, but he won. But you know, before that, it was all like first, second round finishes. And you know, he's got that big win over Kevin Holland in 2022, which, you know, but then again, that was also, I believe, a short notice, late replacement. That was that fight where, you know, I think they had like the top three matches on the card were all changed like the night before. If you remember that one. Yeah. So it was all like, everyone got new opponents and, you know, and he won in like 2 minutes. So, you know, I think he could almost throw that one out. So that's an intriguing one too. And again, the odds are pretty heavy in favor of Chimaev. So there is some value in Whitaker, I think. If you believe that Chimaev may not be 100% and he struggled against top competition, and Whitaker, you know, you mentioned Ryan earlier. Ryan's often called Whitaker possibly the most underrated fighter in history in terms of, like, he's really an all-time great, and he never comes up in those names.
Yeah.
Just for whatever reason. But, you know, he's been around forever, and two weight classes has dominated, and longtime middleweight champion.
Yeah. No, he's just one of the, I mean, he's just someone that you always root for because you know what he's bringing to the table.
Bobby Knux.
Yeah.
Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business and sell more with less effort thanks to the Shopify magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/redcircle, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/redcircle now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/redcircle.
At Kroger Pharmacy, care is making it easy to get vaccinated. Care is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. Care is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.
Ohio seniors, it's time to make the right call for better Medicare benefits with Medical Mutual. Plans start at $0 per month and include $0 doctor visits and $0 generic prescription drugs. Visit MedMutual.com/review or call 1-866-966-9338 to find a plan today. MedMutual Advantage plans are HMO, HMO, POS, and PPO plans offered by Medical Mutual of Ohio with a Medicare contract. Enrollment in a MedMutual Advantage plan depends on contract renewal.
All right. Is it Lerone or Leron Murphy?
I've heard both. Okay. I always go with Lerone, but I've heard both. I don't think he matters as long as you pay him.
Against Dan Ige, featherweight. Yeah. Murphy -250 favorite, Ige +195. Murphy's undefeated with one draw, and he beat Edson Barbosa a few months ago. And Ige 3-2 in his last five, losing to Diego Lopez by decision at UFC 303.
Now, you remember the story with that one, right?
No, I don't.
Where he took that fight on literally about 4 hours' notice.
Who dropped out? Was it that a weightlifting thing?
No, that was against I got to double check this now. This was Lopez was originally supposed to fight someone else, and they dropped out, and they called Dan Ige. He was like, I think he was in a tanning bed or something, and they called him up, and literally on the day of the fight, he was already training for another fight, so he was cleared, and he took this fight on the day of the fight, and they, you know, he went, like, they had a great fight. I'm trying to find this here, but yeah, it was, I'm sure this was a fight. If I'm wrong, Ryan's going to kill me when he but this was the one where, yeah, it was, it, he ended up fighting Diego Lopez, and Diego Lopez was, it was, oh gosh, what's his name? Other featherweight that's been around for a long time. Oh, I'm trying to blank here. Hang on. I should have been better prepared. Brian Ortega. He was supposed to fight Brian Ortega. Brian Ortega dropped out. They called up Dan Ige. Literally, like, the card was or had already started, and that's when he cleared. He weighed in. They agreed to fight at a little bit higher weight. So he literally took this fight on hour's notice, and he was heavily favored to lose, and he ended up going the distance and won over so many fans. And then he asked to be on the spear card, and Dana said no. He got on this one. But Dan, 50K Ige, he's just your favorite fighter's favorite fighter. This fight I'm really looking forward to, but they're not doing him any favors against undefeated Lerone Murphy. He's one of those guys that nobody wants to fight because he doesn't have a very good name and he's like tough as hell. So, you know, and Ige, he'll take any fight. So this could steal the show. This should be fight of the night, honestly. If it's not the main event. And yeah, really, really looking forward to this. And Dan Ige is a guy you can't help but root for.
So when it comes to the kind of fight that you were talking about that he stepped into, like, he's in the sauna. So his body is already sort of relaxed and he's got to figure out how to get out of that mindset.
Literally, like, he gets out and says, oh, hey, Dana's trying to call you. So he's, oh, okay, great. And call him. Hey, can you fight? Yeah. Where? When? You know, and it was like, and it was a pay-per-view. Like, it was, you know, like, and it was a co-main event. It was, you know, and he's like, he's going from like, he's probably gonna be fighting at the Apex in 3 weeks to fighting tonight. And he's like, yeah, let's do it.
So, that's why he is given the possibility. That's why he's given the chances, because he's
he lost that fight, but his stock rose big time with that one. Yeah, I'm surprised. I think you must have missed that show or something, but it was a huge, incredible story at the time.
All right. So the next fight, Magomed Ankalaev -400 favorite against Alexander Rakic, +300 light heavyweights. Ankalaev 3-0-1 with a no contest in his last five, and he knocked Johnny Walker out last January, and that was the rematch of the no contest fight. Rakic is 2-3 in his last five, but losing to Jiří Procházka and who was it? Jan, right? He lost to Jan as well.
Jan Blachowicz, yeah.
And he's only fought once since 2022 because of an ACL injury, and that was at UFC 300. So that's a bummer because football players are returning from ACLs in 7, 8, 9 months, and that dude had to take like almost 2 years off. That's terrible.
Yeah, and he got stuck in, put in there against Procházka, who's a killer, right? So that's not easy either. And then you got Ankalaev, who really, he, for the longest time, Dana had said, the guy's never going to get a title shot because he had that one main event where he just stunk up the joint. Like, he won, but it was against Thiago Santos, I think, Volkan Ozdemir. One of those two fights was just terrible. And then Dana White told him, no, you're never getting a title shot. And then since then, I think it was the Santos fight, because since then he's had four fights, three of them have been finishes. And then you had a split decision draw against Blachowicz. That might have actually been the fight, now that I think about it. I think it was the Blachowicz fight in December 2022, because I remember it was at the end of the year. So, yeah, it was that one. And, yeah, since then he come back. He beat Johnny Walker twice. The last one was good. If he gets a good finish here, and Rakic is a guy that he can finish, he's probably going to be getting the next shot at Alex Pereira. which, you know, maybe a death sentence, but it's hard to say because Ankalaev's got great wrestling. And, you know, that's the one thing that we're not sure of with Pereira, if he can defend that. But that'll be a big fight, especially if he comes out of here with a finish.
And then on the main card, Shara Magomedov, minus 165 favorite against Armin Petrosyan. Yeah. Petrosyan at +140 middleweight fight. Magomedov is 3-0 in the UFC, including winning a fight just a couple months ago. And Petrosyan is 3-2 in his last five, including losing to Rodolfo Vieira in February.
Yeah, both these guys are, Petrosyan's probably a little bit better known than Shara. Shara's up and coming, 14-0 in his career. I think there's a little bit of value on him. He's -185, and I think he probably should be a bigger favorite than that. You know, Petrosyan is better known, so a lot of times the better known fighters get more money coming in on them. So I kind of like the odds for Magomedov, even though he's a favorite. And Petrosyan is right for getting beat. And Magomedov at 185, you know, that division doesn't have a lot of clear contenders, so he gets a win here over a name people know. He should be probably getting a top 25 fighter next. And, you know, maybe a year and a half from now, maybe he's in the title mix.
And then on the prelims card, the name fighters that people would recognize for sure, Jeff Neal and Rafael Dos Anjos, both guys coming off of losses, actually two losses in a row, and neither guy has been super active of late. Is that the top fight on the undercard?
Oh, in terms of name value, absolutely. In terms of fights that, you know, like if you're looking for like quote unquote a good fight, I would probably say the bantamweight fight between Fareed Basharat and Victor Hugo is probably the one that hardcore fans would be most looking forward to. But other than that, like there's really not much on this undercard. Like it's, you know, I watch every show and there's like four or five names I don't even know here. One of the ones I'm personally looking forward to is Kennedy Injescu and Chris Barnett. And the reason for that one is Chris Barnett is coming down from heavyweight and he's a big heavyweight. So I don't know. I have no idea what he's going to look like at 205 because he was fat at heavyweight. So this one's going to be weird. And Injescu is built like a, you know, like a fire truck. So this one could be interesting. It could be fun. You know what? I'm sorry. I thought that it's Kennedy that's moving up. Sorry, my bad. So yeah, I thought this was a light heavyweight for some reason, but no, they're a heavyweight. So yeah, Chris Barnett's gonna be fat like he always is, but Kennedy, maybe he's not going to have to cut as much weight as he usually does. And it could be better for him because he gets tired late in fights. And so maybe being not having to cut all that weight, because like I said, he's built tough. So maybe he's just going to bulk up a bit. And so that one's interesting. But I also look at that one and Kennedy is a huge favorite. So, you know, going up a weight class to heavyweight, that's a big jump, 205 to 250, 265. So, you know, there may be some value there too.
All right, let's go to the segment. Best bet segment. Okay. All right, so you've explained this before on this show, but just quickly, the idea of your ROI system and, I mean, how successful it's been for you.
Okay, I'm going to explain it, and then I'm going to tell you something. So the ROI system is based on past performance. And so essentially, if you wagered, and I just use a base number of 100 because it's an easy number to work with. If you wagered $100 on each fight and bet on that fighter, what would your profit loss be? And so I look at the history of all of those fighters. I have a spreadsheet that has their history going back as long as we've had odds. I go back 10 fights. So if a fighter's been fighting longer than that, it's only the most recent 10. And essentially whatever the highest percentage is, the profit that you're getting per fight, that gives you a higher ROI. So in a lot of cases, some of these fighters, they get as high as 80 or 90%, which means you're getting an average of $80 to $90 profit on every $100 bet. Having said all that, I haven't actually done my ROI yet for this show. Unfortunately, I told you I would have it ready in time, but real life got in the way today and I didn't have a chance to do it. So I will send out my ROI picks on X. So you can follow me at Paul A's Fontaine on X. I will send those out probably tomorrow. And I will also post them in the Fight Game Media Discord if you're in there. And if you're not in there, you can send Gigi an email, gigi@fightgamemedia.com. But yeah, I'll send them both. But I did look at the card and I looked at the odds and I've identified, and I kind of know in my head some of the fighters that have historically high ROIs anyways without the actual figures. So I do have three best bets for you.
Okay.
Cool. So my first one is Rafael Dos Anjos, RDA. You mentioned fighting Jeff Neal. RDA is moving up. You know, he normally fights at 155 and Jeff Neal is always at 170, but RDA has actually done better at 170. And, you know, he's a veteran and there's a lot of value there. He's plus 250 on the odds that I'm looking at. So I really like that one because I do think there's a better than 3-1 chance, you know, that he wins and that's a profit you're getting. Another one I like is Bruno Silva on the undercard. You look at his record and he's 23-11, but that's misleading because he's fought a lot of big names and he's fighting Ismael Nardiev, who is making his UFC debut. And this one is almost a toss up, but you're getting a little bit of value on Bruno Silva at plus 105. So I like him there. And then in the co-main, Robert Whittaker, I think I mentioned earlier, I think there's value there at plus 185. You're getting nearly 2-1 on your money against Khamzat, who's such a wild card. And it's just like, I think Whittaker is primed. I mentioned 185 is kind of a weak weight class and we got a new, relatively new champion there. I don't think Whittaker and DDP have fought. They did fight in 2023. DDP just lost the title. Never mind. So he hasn't fought the new champ yet. He is the champ. God. get prepared. No, but he's trying to work his way back, and I do like him, and I don't think UFC wants Khamzat to win this fight, honestly.
Really?
Yeah, he's such a wild card. I don't think you want to promote a middleweight title fight with him. I just don't, like, you know, I don't even know if Khamzat's a draw, you know. It's hard to say, like, sure, obviously in that market he is, but you know.
By the way, just because you mentioned DDP did beat Adesanya about 2 months ago, in defending his middleweight championship, he beat him by submission.
Yeah, no, that was
and he beat Robert Whittaker to get to the title fight against Sean Strickland.
Yeah, 2023.
Yeah. So that's
obviously DDP is on a long win streak. He's won 9 in a row. So. Good champion there, but yeah, I want to see Whittaker back up there, and so part of this is my heart, but I do think there is some value there with him at plus 185. I do look at this though, and I'm really going to be relying on my ROI for this one when I put actual money down, because a lot of these fights, like, the odds kind of look right in a lot of these cases, so yeah, I struggle to find some value in some of these, but I do like RDA, Bruno Silva, and Bobby Knuckles.
All right. Now, there was a lawsuit, antitrust lawsuit settlement that happened. And where are we? I'm confused about where because Filthy Tom Lawlor was on Wrestling Observer Radio, who explained it. He heard all that. He was there, very happy about the outcome. But now it sits where?
So I'm not a lawyer. I cover MMA, and so I've been following this lawsuit, but I don't. So my understanding is that originally when they came to a settlement agreement, the judge rejected it. Judge Bullower rejected the settlement. It was originally, I think, $335 million between the two different classes. So there was the 2010 to 2017, which was the Kung Lee lawsuit, and there was the 2017 on, which is the Cajon Johnson lawsuit. They rejected the $335 million settlement, told them to go back to the bargaining table and come up with something else. Both sides didn't like that decision. They came back with a $375 million offer to settle for only the Kung Lee portion of the lawsuit. And there was some discrepancy on what portion of that original $335 was going to be for that portion. I think the number Dave Meltzer reported was $300 million. So essentially, it was a 25% increase to the fighters on the Kung Lee side. So Judge Bullower recommended that this settlement be accepted. So I'm not exactly sure what that means in terms of, like, what needs to happen next, but I think it's as close to a rubber stamp as you're going to have. So it's just probably a matter of you know, people signing off, crossing, dotting I's, crossing T's, whatever. Like, I believe this means it is the settlement's agreed to. The UFC fighters are going to get paid. We're just not exactly sure when. Of that $375 million, about $260 million will go to the fighters, which there could be potentially, I think the number Tom Lawler said was 1,214 potential fighters. A lot of those fighters, you know, some may be passed away. Some don't even know about the suit. Some live in other countries and may have a hard time, you know, collecting. It's unsure how many of the 1,214 fighters will actually get part of the money. But assuming they all did, a fighter like Tom, who fought six times in UFC over that 7 years, would get about $150,000 of that $260 million. So that's kind of a barometer. He was, you know, a mid to high level fighter at different points. So he's probably an average. I think the number I heard was 500 fighters would get over $100,000. And, you know, a lot of the guys on the top end are eating up a lot of this money, like Ronda Rousey, John Jones.
50, it might've been 50. I think I heard 50.
50 that are getting over a million.
No, 50,000 for that larger section of fighters, we're going to get over 50,000.
No, I think I could be wrong, but I think, you might be right. Like, I think it was like 800 or something. I don't know. The average of, as Tom Lawler explained it, it's 14,000 per fight plus 30% of your career earnings during that time. That's what your settlement is.
Okay, you might be right. You might be right about here. I'm quoting from the MMA Fighting article from a couple days ago. Under the settlement, LE class members would recover, on average, after all fees and costs are deducted, $250,000. 35 class members would net over $1 million. Nearly 100 fighters would net over $500,000. More than 200 fighters would recover over $250,000. And then over 500 fighters would net in excess of $100,000. And nearly 800 would recover over 50,000.
There we go. Yeah. So those are the last two were the numbers I had remembered, but I wasn't sure if I was right. So yeah, Lawler is, you know, probably middle of the road in terms of that. I mentioned some of the big names, Jones, Lesnar, St. Pierre. They're going to get like 10 million probably. Like, they're getting a big portion of this, but some of these fighters really need it. And the number, I think Dave reported that 150 fighters had sent letters to the judge saying, you know, like, we need this money, please accept this settlement. It's a lot of money, you know, and for a fighter who, you know, maybe has been retired for, you know, 5-10 years, can't really do much else. They probably aren't making a ton of money right now. And, you know, getting a six-figure settlement 10 years later is, they've called it life-changing. And to some people, you might look at, oh, $100,000, is that really life-changing? But for some people, it is. You know, it pays some medical bills, may help you pay your mortgage off, you know, hopefully it doesn't just, you know, they don't just waste it. Tom Lawler compared it to like getting a pension, you know, and for fighters who don't have a pension, you know, that's kind of probably how you have to look at it.
Okay. Here's my question, because when I look at that lawsuit, I very much understand why Tom wanted the settlement. You get the money now, it's predictable. Yep. You can at least say, hey, this is what I get. Could I have gotten more down the line? Sure, but I wasn't willing to risk that. Or at least I didn't want to risk that. But how does this lawsuit shape the fight industry? I don't think it does.
It doesn't. I mean, honestly, in a way, like, it's a lot of money for the fighters, but to UFC, it's, you know, it's what, 6 months profit? You know, and I mean, their stock went up when this settlement was announced. So that tells you what the general public and investors think about this law, you know, this settlement.
TKO is actually down $11 today.
Could that be the Ring Boys lawsuit?
And I wondered, it's just a bunch of stuff has come at them lately, right? Post Mr. McMahon, the Janelle Grant thing is happening weekly. Then the UFC lawsuit, and then now the Ring Boy stuff. So they're
But I know when this settlement was originally announced, like the day it was announced, their stock shot up. I, you know, if I'm looking at it objectively, I don't really understand what the case is that to get them paid. Like, they negotiated contracts. They were paid according to what they negotiated. It's not like there wasn't competition. There was other companies out there promoting MMA at the time. A lot of them were paying more than UFC. So if you wanted to make more money, you could go fight for Bellator. You could go fight for Strikeforce. You could go fight for PFL One. It's not
how many
like
shows did Affliction do?
Not many, but and I don't even know if those guys got paid, honestly. But I do know, like, guys in Bellator, like, they did get paid, and guys left. You know, Benson Henderson left in the prime of his career. Ryan Bader.
Rampage.
You know, there were, near the end
of Rampage's career, but still.
Yeah, but he was still a draw.
Yeah.
And, you know, he did that one show where they did 100,000 buys. And guys had a choice. And, you know, what's his name? The guy that fought Rampage, King Mo. Mm-hmm. He could have gone to UFC. He chose Bellator because they offered him more money.
Yeah.
So, you know, there was competition. And so in that sense, like, yeah, they did proprietary practice and it looks bad. And yeah, the fighters definitely didn't get paid enough, but that's what they negotiated to be paid. So for them to come at, you know, 10 years later, all of a sudden they're getting paid. Yeah. You know, I think a guy like a Tom Lawler or most of the fighters in this class are probably looking at it like, yeah, you know what? Like, great. We'll take the money. Full disclosure, I was part of a class action lawsuit years ago where I, by all rights, should have gotten probably 10 times what I received. Mm-hmm. Based on what the lawsuit was for, but we all voted and we all agreed, and I voted yes to take the settlement because right. I didn't want it dragged out and I wanted that money. And yeah. And it also helped me pay for some medication that I needed. And if I didn't get that medication, I may not have survived until the lawsuit was over because I would have to pay for that medication out of pocket and then hope to be reimbursed. And part of the settlement was getting that medication. So I understand it from the fighter's perspective. That they want that money now. And if I was a fighter, I would have been right with them, you know. And then for like a, you know, the guys at the top end, like, what do they care? You know, it's another 10 million. And if I'm being perfectly honest, the ones that probably got screwed more are the fighters on the top end. You know, like if you look at some of those payouts, Ronda Rousey was getting $2-3 million a fight on shows that were generating $25-30 million. If this was boxing, she'd have made triple what she made in UFC.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, in that sense, people are going to look at it and think, oh yeah, you know, the younger fighter, the undercard fighter is getting screwed and the big names are just getting more money that they don't need. In actuality, the big draws were the ones that were screwed. If yeah. you know this.
Yeah.
You know,
absolutely.
Like, the most underpaid guy in the history of sports is LeBron James.
yeah. He's probably worth three yeah. times to his, yep. to the NBA, what he makes. Per his NBA contract. But as a part of pro sports, and this is why you have unions, right, is mm-hmm. the top end is always going to carry the bottom end. And that's what makes that. That's how you can actually have a union is because you know, for Conor McGregor, he would be the top end carrying the bottom if a union existed in MMA. But why would he be interested? He's the cash cow. So, you know, yeah. why would he take less to support people who may not support him is kind of the way that I read it. But, you know, if you want the sport to be stronger from the fighter perspective, it does seem like a union is the way to go. But that also doesn't sound like it's something that's going to happen.
No. And we have the same problem in pro wrestling. And that's the end, you know, and even in some other sports, like I think golf, you know, they have a kind of a union, but, you know, they're finally starting to get paid. And some of this money is coming out of the woodwork when Liv, yeah. you know, started paying people. And all of a sudden PGA found a bunch of money that they didn't know they had. So, yeah.
Okay. So, as we, close this one down, I just wanted to look at a couple of fights on the horizon. The card
next week is huge, but you want to talk about the pay-per-view.
Well, I was going to talk about the pay-per-view, but what is on the card next week that people should keep their eye on?
So next week they're in Edmonton and it's fight night. And it's the top fight is Brandon Moreno, who is one of the you know, former flyweight champion, one of the biggest stars of the lighter weight classes in the sport. And I'm honestly surprised he's headlining a fight night, but he's fighting against Amir Abalzi. This is essentially a title eliminator, number two and number three contender. You've got Rosen Namajunas, former champion at strawweight, and I believe flyweight as well, fighting Aaron Blanchfield, who is possibly one of the top contenders that UFC has in any weight class. So this is a huge fight at women's flyweight. And then you got Derek Lewis fighting in the featured fight against Jannata Diaz. So three big fights that could easily all be co-main events on a pay-per-view are headlining this card in Edmonton next Saturday, November 2nd. I believe it'll be on ESPN Plus. I know it's Sportsnet here. I don't think it'll be on ESPN proper because of college football. But and then, you know, a bunch of names on the rest of the card as well. You know, a lot of Canadians, obviously, because it's in Canada. But this one is like, I was shocked when I saw the depth of this card. So I'm really looking forward to that. And then, yeah, and then 2 weeks after that, we got that MSG card.
And can we get Derek Lewis some like dry fit shorts or like some to cool him down during the fight? This dude, hey, overseas,
he's going to be in he's going to be in Canada in November. So I don't think that's going to be a problem. His balls won't be hot.
Yeah. So this is we'll talk about this when we do the preview of 309, but I just kind of wanted to, you know, when the antitrust thing came out and I thought, you know, John Jones, he's going to be getting this big paycheck. More than the actual fight itself, Jones versus Stipe, I'm actually more interested in the fallout of that fight because theoretically, it sounds like it could be kind of the end for both guys. Now, I don't, you know, John may be like Floyd Mayweather and just go, okay, like if you have something giant where I can make, you know, tens of millions of dollars, then, you know, then maybe I'm interested. But otherwise, you know, I'm not down for this grind as a rich guy. And he hasn't really fought in a while anyway. No. So it's not like he's super active. He is kind of like a prize fighter, you know, in that sense of the word. But the fallout of this, you know, say Jones wins, say he wins impressively again. Like, can you sense this actually being like a double retirement?
Well, I think probably like even money if I'm betting, like this probably the last fight for both of them, almost certainly for Stipe. For Jones, like you said, I mean, it's just a matter of like, there's that Aspinall fight out there. You know, Aspinall's the interim heavyweight champion right now. And, you know, they could headline a stadium show in England, theoretically, or even in Vegas. And, you know, and they could pay Jones. I mean, they can pay Jones whatever they want to pay him. They can pay him $30 million if they want to, but you know, it's whether or not they want to establish that they're going to pay a guy $30 million, because as soon as they pay Jones $30 million, Connor wants 50, you know, like, and so, you know, they're looking at that and they're trying to keep the pay down and everything like that, but I think they're going to make him a decent offer because they want that fight. And then, you know, I've noticed ever since last weekend, you know, they're talk of him and Ngannou's, you know, firing up again. And I think that's a fight a lot of people want to see, but I don't see how that happens under the current landscape, unless UFC is trying to avoid, you know, if there's any kind of antitrust thing going on, you know, whatever, that they're holding fighters down, because I know that was one of the changes they were hoping to get affected by this Kung Lee lawsuit, was having the titles go out of the hands of the promotions so that you could make fights like Jones and Miosic, or, you know, Ryan Bader and Alex Pereira, or, you know, whatever, like fighters among different promotions. So, but if I had a gun in my head, I'd say, yeah, you know, I would not be surprised at all if this is the last fight for both guys. But I know that if Jones wins and if he knocks Stipe out, there's going to be a lot of people wanting that Aspinall fight. So
it doesn't sound like it's anything that's interesting to him, though.
Well, he may just be negotiating, or he may be looking at Aspinall and say, I don't want to fight that guy.
Yeah, the upside of of that fight.
Well, the upside is the money. I mean, that's it, right? Like, his legacy is established. So he can retire on top, or he can take a chance of getting knocked out for the first time in his career. And maybe he's looking at it and saying, yeah, you know, I'd rather just retire.
Yeah, yeah. That's what it seems like.
I think so. But I do think that he would fight Ngannou if that opportunity was available, but I don't think it is. I don't think it will be.
And I wonder, so because Aspinall has a share of the title, correct?
Yeah, I mean, he's, like I said, he's the interim title. So if Jones wins and retires, then I think Aspinall just becomes the heavyweight champion.
Yeah. And I wonder, who would be Aspinall's contender, do you think, right away?
I look at the rankings. There's nobody like obvious. I'm just pulling up the rankings here. I got, I mean, he's already beat Gone. I mean, Pavlovich, I think he's already fought. Like, there's nobody. Like, I mean, you look at the top 10, it's Aspinall is the interim champ. Cyril Gane, Alexander Volkov, Sergey Pavlovich, Curtis Blaydes, Gelton Almeida, maybe, Sergey Spivak, Stipe is the number 8 contender. Yerzin, so Rozenstruik, Marcin Tybura, Derek Lewis, like, it, heavyweight. I think the big fight, honestly, is probably Alex Pereira moving up.
That's what I was going to bring up, which you know, I guess it's not a risk if you're going to pay this dude to move up, but he's kind of on an all-time tear right now.
Yeah.
And then, you know, you pay him because your main event at the heavyweight level is not all that interesting. It's fascinating. It's fascinating what they could do. And like, he's the goods. He's absolutely the goods. He's exactly what you want in a UFC fighter. He's a scary, scary dude who knocks people out and can be vulnerable at the same time, right? And he's big, he's tall. He could probably put on the weight and do it in a semi-healthy way and, you know, kind of go up and down a little bit. It's a risk in that, you know, he's a little bit older and you can age him a little quickly by having the weight class changes and such. But it's fascinating.
And he's brought up wanting that fight. So it's just a matter of whether or not UFC wants him to do that jump. He's also talked about going back to 185. So, you know, like he's up for anything. I double checked and Gelton Almeida is the top contender who hasn't yet fought, but he also lost to Curtis Blaydes who did get beat by, things. So as I'm looking at that list, I mean, there's nobody that jumps out and there's no like super contenders. You know, the last one was, might've been Pavlovich, but Aspinall finished him off in 1:08. So, you know, it's rough pickings at heavyweight as it often is. So,
the other fight on that same card is Charles Oliveira and Michael Chandler. Now, this was supposed to be the Connor fight. Connor, another guy who, I mean, would you be surprised if he never fought again? I don't think so. Like,
no, not at all. I mean, but then again, you know, they could announce a fight, you know, next week
he's going to fight. You'd be like, okay.
I think if he's going to fight again, most likely is probably March. That's usually when they do a Vegas show and he's really only going to fight in Vegas. Chandler's been sitting for 2 years waiting for that Connor fight, finally agreed to fight Charles Oliveira, who, you know, I mean, the Bronx, he's been around forever. He's, you know, I think he's got the UFC record for most performance bonuses. This will be a great fight. If it's not fight of the night, we'll be shocked. And Chandler is, you know, always in wars like this, you know, this is just a great fight. Should be for the BMF title. It's not, but should be. This is the fight that everyone's buying the show for. Yeah. I shouldn't say that. I mean, obviously John Jones, but for me as a hardcore fight fan, it's Oliveira Chandler.
But it is a good opportunity. Like if you've been watching the UFC, I mean, John Jones was on UFC 100, right? So it's like if you've been watching this stuff for a while and you've seen this man's entire career, you know, no matter if you like his personality or not, and I'm assuming most people don't, but at the end of the day, to see one of the all-time greats, you kind of have to, you know, you kind of have to buy these shows. You don't want to miss that last John Jones. It was sort of the same way with Anderson until Anderson just started fighting, like, you know, when he was way
better than him. I told you that about Jose Aldo like a year and a half ago, and he's fought like 3 times since. I think this one's probably more likely to stick.
So I think, not 100% sure, but I think Saturday evening we'll probably be doing something with Big Dave. The following pay-per-view, I think he's on vacation. I'm not sure if we're doing anything for Wrestling Observer Radio. If he asked my advisement, I would say just do not even pay attention to it. You could watch it when you get home. And if, you know, if you still do want to do something, you and I could do something here this channel.
Absolutely.
Because I think that's a show that, you know, there's going to be some intrigue and I think people are going to be excited about it. So
Yeah, and we also got Bo Nickel fighting there, and yes, he's the next big thing. So definitely,
you know, whenever I hear the Denver Broncos quarterback Bo Nix, I immediately think someone's talking about Bo Nickel, and I go, no, they're talking about the Denver Broncos starting quarterback. Yeah. All right, that is it. Thank you, Paul, for jumping on this. I really enjoyed this, and I appreciate you hanging out. And hopefully, we get some stuff done this weekend outside of watching MMA and pro wrestling. So,
yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Did you want to, I guess, Twitter, your X account?
At Paul Ace Fontaine on X. I will post my ROI there sometime on Friday. So check that out and you can make some money with me. You asked how I do. I do pretty well. Yeah, I average about $100 profit a week. So
oh, that's good. That supports the habit right there.
Pays for the pay-per-views.
Yeah.
I'm also got the Dynamite show on the Fight Game Media Network.
Went up last night.
Yep. YouTube channel on our audio feed as well. So you can check that out. Me and Jeff Hawkins. We do a great show. And yeah, I do Wrestling Observer Radio on occasion. So usually with you, sometimes with Brian. So
yep. Yeah. And you'll join me next week on Fight Game Podcast. So
yeah, looking forward to it. I got to watch that show. Halloween Havoc, Halloween 89, Havoc, right?
89. Great Muta and Terry Funk against Ric Flair and Sting in the cage.
And the debut of Doom.
Yeah. Oh, okay. I forgot about that.
Yeah.
I forgot about that. All right. That is it from here. Thanks to Paul. I am Double G. We will see you when we see you. Peace out.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger for thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
We've seen the impact we make when we stand together. So let's stand with candidates who represent us in Washington, D.C. Sherrod Brown always stands up for the well-being of our community, capping the price of insulin and cracking down on predatory landlords jacking up rents in Black neighborhoods. Black power is in our votes. Let's use it today. Vote now to re-elect Senator Sherrod Brown.
Paid for by Ask Me People, AskMePeople.org, which is responsible for the content of this ad, not authorized by any candidate or candidate's committee.